There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We've bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Rees-Mandel, and I'm your host. On today's program, looking behind the curtain at journalism and the media, Jim Romanesco is the guy who's been doing it and putting online for well over 10 years. He's going to tell us why, how, and what he sees in his crystal ball for the future of journalism. You do want to stay tuned. I've been reading Jim Romanesco's influential media news blog for well over 10 years now, from the time that he started as an independent blogger up to the time that he joined the Poynter Institute, Poynter Online, which is a institute dedicated to journalism education, especially for practicing journalists. And it's because he has a concise daily lineup of stories about the media, about the business of media, about what goes on in journalism, what goes on behind the curtain, so to speak. Stuff that would take me hours and hours to go find on my own. And I know that lots of other folks, both inside and outside the media industry, also turn to Jim's website frequently. So I want to talk to him at this point when it seems like newspapers are in crisis across the country. When we're seeing layoffs, we're seeing loss of bureaus, and we're seeing papers hemorrhage money. Journalism seems not to be doing well. So I wanted Jim to tell us a bit more about his online existence in Romanesco's Media News. And also want to talk to him a little bit about where he sees journalism going. So here, earlier today, Jim tells me exactly what is Romanesco's Media News.
Well, actually, it goes before Romanesco's Media News. Before that, it was called Media Gossip. And in 1998, I started posting media items. And in 1999, I started MediaGossip.com. And it was basically a collection of anything media related that I saw on the internet before I went into work at my day job at the St. Paul Pioneer Press, which basically meant anything that I discovered from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. in the morning. And, you know, in those days I only had maybe a couple hundred readers, but I've always been interested in the media. I was a press critic at Milwaukee Magazine for about 17 years. So my online media work is just kind of a continuation of what I was doing there. And the site has evolved over time from kind of a casual gossip type site to, I think, a serious look at what's happening in the industry.
So if we go back to the late 90s, what did the types of stories you post consist of? And were you doing... You said you called it media gossip. Were you posting actual gossip, or were you mostly going to other sources on the internet?
It was other sources. It wasn't, you know, what you might call a dredge type gossip site. I was an aggregator, and in the late 90s, newspapers still were doing pretty well. The internet had not taken off the way it has now. Web 2.0, you know, did not exist then. So papers were still making very good profit margins. And so I didn't have the stories about newspaper woes. There were a lot of profiles about journalists. There were some controversies in journalism. And, you know, I guess I did more TV news items back then for some reason, but it probably was, you might say, a better time for newspapers and journalism in general, and the site in the late 90s reflected that.
When you started, this was essentially a hobby, and you were still a working journalist, or a working journalist for papers?
Right. I worked at the St. Paul Pioneer Press as a technology columnist, and the Poynter Institute, which is based in Florida, it's a journalism school for working journalists. They were looking to do a media website, and it just happened that in August of 99, the New York Times did a piece on people who were doing these websites, and I happened to be profiled in it, and Poynter Institute saw that and said, hey, this guy's doing exactly what we had planned to do. Why don't we bring him down? And so they interviewed me for the job, and I said, well, I really don't want to move to St. Petersburg, Florida, but I'll go to the Chicago area. And they said, yeah, it doesn't make a difference where you are. So since August of 1999, I've been working for Poynter.
The site's been going for about a decade, so you've been able to see this real tectonic shift in journalism, as you mentioned at the start of doing media, of you doing your media gossip to now. Back then, newspapers were doing quite well financially, and now we see that the reverse is true. They're not doing very well. What has it been like to be essentially reporting on this every day, to be watching this progression over the course of the last decade?
Well, I've always been a big fan of newspapers. I remember even as a kid, you know, reading them. My parents used to subscribe to four newspapers, and I delivered a newspaper and read the paper while I was doing my route, and started out at the Milwaukee Journal. So I've always been close to print. So it's kind of sad to see the decline of print. But at the same time, I read, obviously, a lot of papers online and have slowly changed my habits. I get the New York Times now only on Saturdays and Sundays in print, read it online the other days, get the Tribune, Chicago Tribune, only a couple of days a week, read it online the other days, too. So, you know, it is somewhat sad seeing the demise of print, but it just seems like it's natural that it would. You know, I sometimes walk to my neighborhood Starbucks at 5:30 in the morning. I see the big Chicago Tribune trucks dropping off the papers, and just like, you know, that really looks like just a waste of gas and energy and paper. You know, it just it's starting to look foolish to have the old newspaper delivered. And I think what's sad too is a lot of my friends are getting laid off from newspapers, and, you know, just seeing them worried for the ones who are still working are still very worried for their jobs. So on a personal level, that's distressing. But as for my site, I mean, every day I'm reporting cuts at newspapers around the country. Just within the last hour, I posted an item about the Chicago Tribune laying off some foreign correspondents. They're closing Jerusalem Bureau and making other cuts too. So it's an endless stream of cuts, and I suspect it will continue for years. And, you know, I guess if there's an upside, it's I think I'll continue to have a job just to report this downfall.
You used the word aggregator before.
Right.
So that means that much of what you are posting to your site is really a direct link to another full story with maybe a little bit of a summary, or do you put in much commentary?
You know, it's a pretty cut and dry. And I think it started out when I was rushing to do this site before I went to work in the morning. You know, to do good commentary, you really have to, I think, do some deep thinking. And I just didn't have any time really to think. You know, it was basically link, and write a 3-sentence summary and move on to the next item. And that's kind of been my style that I've done. I guess I'm not what you might call an opinion columnist or an opinion aggregator. I just put the link up and describe briefly what it is and move on to the next item. You know, what I try to do is kind of cast a wider net for stories than other media sites. Looking for little items that you won't find another media blog. For example, today I found an interview with Leonard Downey Jr., the former Washington Post editor, kind of an amusing little story from the Ohio State newspaper. And Len Downey was the sports editor when he was at Ohio State, and he was recalling in the story how he would go to the locker room after football games, and Woody Hayes, the legendary coach, would be in the locker room. And when the team lost, Woody Hayes would do his press briefings naked. And Leonard Downey was saying, you know, Hayes didn't have the greatest body in the world, so the press conferences didn't last long as everybody ran out of the locker room. But I mean, that's an item that I can guarantee you probably didn't see on another website. But I try to link to alternative weeklies that most people don't look at. I linked to a Chicago Reader piece today. It was somewhat interesting. And a lot of the smaller websites that people generally don't find on their own. But like I said, I try to cast a wide net and bring in as many stories as I can that would be of interest to journalists or just people interested in the journalism business and trade.
I noticed that you often cite sources like college newspapers, university newspapers, and you even run stories or cite stories regarding high school and other sort of student publications. And that crops up rather frequently on your site. Is that a particular interest of yours? Is there a reason why you try to give that coverage?
Yeah, part of it may be that I was a high school newspaper editor for 3 years, and I also worked at my college paper. And, you know, I'm interested in student journalism, and I think that a lot of those issues are very interesting. I posted one today from Lincolnshire, Illinois, where the hooking up edition of the student newspaper vanished quite quickly, and the school administrators swore that they didn't confiscate the papers, that they said the parents and the students took the papers off the racks. I don't know if they didn't want others to read about these students' one-night stands or whatever. But I also see some. I think yesterday I posted two stories from college newspapers, and both of them had interviews with professional journalists, and they not only had the stories, but they had the full the audio of the interviews. So, you know, if you wanted to go beyond the 10-paragraph story, you could listen to the 5 or 10-minute interview that the source, the subject, had with the reporter, which I thought was a good idea. You don't see that even on a lot of professional websites. They don't link the audio of all their interviews, but I see more and more of that in college papers.
You do really rely heavily upon mainstream journalism, mainstream media, and other sources of print and online journalism to keep going. I mean, really, to have the sources which you draw from.
Obviously, if there were no media reporters, if there was no Howard Kurtz from the Washington Post or Phil Rosenthal from the Chicago Tribune or James Rainey from the LA Times and so on and so forth, I would have nobody to link to. One thing I've noticed is when I started doing this, there were a couple dozen newspaper ombudsman columns, and I would every Monday have a whole list of columns that I would link to. And now there are so few ombudsmen that some Mondays, in fact, this week I didn't even have any roundup of ombuds because there simply were not enough columns out there.
And what were these columns like? Maybe a lot of people aren't familiar with what the ombudsman is.
The ombudsman was assigned at a newspaper to deal with reader complaints, and generally they would write a Sunday column tackling a controversial issue that maybe readers complained about, or they would explain why the newspaper took a certain approach to its coverage of an issue that, it was kind of an in-house press critic. And when newspapers started downsizing, laying off people, the ombudsman position was generally one of the first to go. And in the last year or two, almost every newspaper ombudsman position has been eliminated. I'm trying to think. The Raleigh News and Observer still has an ombudsman, the New York Times, the Washington Post. But the ones that have gotten rid of ombudsmen in the last year include the Chicago Tribune, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, the Sun Sentinel, I believe, down in Florida. Just a whole string of them. So, but yeah, as long as there are reporters writing about media, I will have a job, I think.
Is, in your opinion, the loss of these ombudsmen a larger loss, a loss to journalism, besides the fact that you don't have the columns to link from, but that role of public accountability?
Oh, I think so. I think it is a great loss. A lot of the ombudsmen would tell stories about angry readers calling them about something, and I'm going to cancel my paper and so on and so forth, and the ombudsman would talk some sense into these people and rationally explain why the newspaper did this or that, and would develop a relationship with the reader and would explain the policies and why newspapers did things. And I think that they were a good way for newspapers to reach out to readers and kind of deal with the arrogance issue. Newspapers have always had this arrogant reputation, and sometimes these ombudsmen could successfully convince readers that, hey, we're here to listen to you, or at least I'm here to listen to you, and we're not the big bad media, liberal media or conservative media that you think we are. So it is a loss, but newspapers are laying off so many people. The cartoonists now are being chopped out. Syndicated cartoonists and editorial cartoonists are going. Foreign bureaus are being shuttered. So it was only inevitable that the ombudsman position would go.
You've been on both sides. You're now sort of a watcher and a observer, and you've been in the employ of papers. Was this inevitable with the rise of the internet? This steady downfall, the losing, firing of people, profits going down?
I think so, because newspapers used to be monopolies in almost every metro area. And they were just cash machines. They had 35-40% profit margins in some communities. And if you wanted to buy an ad, you had to go to that local paper. And they are no longer monopolies, even if there's one paper in town, simply because you can obviously get your news online from anywhere. And it isn't necessary for you to subscribe or to advertise in the local paper. And that's hurting newspapers. And Craigslist is just killing them also, because classified ads used to be just brought in money left and right. I mean, that's really where newspapers made their dollars. And they didn't see the impact that Craigslist would have on them until fairly recently. I remember just a couple of years ago, when a lot of the newspaper publishers still didn't know what Craigslist was, and yet say, Craigslist, that's the website that's killing your business with its free classified. So that's another reason. So, yeah, I mean, the print to digital transition is very difficult for papers, and they cannot get the advertising dollars. You know, a newspaper charges thousands of dollars for a full-page ad. And what's the equivalent of a full-page ad online? I mean, it could be a pop-up ad or whatever, and they certainly are not getting thousands of dollars for that. So it's tough.
Yet as the New York Times and Chicago Tribune and other papers across the country shed reporters and shed writers, that's overall less content that's going onto the internet.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And, you know, the New York Times, to its credit, is still holding on to its staff. But some other papers that I look at, you know, I can sense that, you know, they're no longer covering some beats that they used to. And, you know, that's kind of a void. You know, even Los Angeles Times laid off or bought out their real estate reporter. And she was great. I mean, she did a great job. And I missed that beat. Some newspapers have laid off foreign correspondents. The Baltimore Sun used to be known as you know, a newspaper with tradition, great tradition of foreign correspondence, and they've shuttered all their bureaus. So, yeah, as they cut back on reporters, there's less and less content. I was just in Milwaukee last weekend, and I used to work for the Milwaukee Journal, which was always a very fat paper, and I picked it up, and it's just like, my God, is this what the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel has come to? But it's not much different than other papers around the country.
Are we going through then a shakeout out of which something new will grow? Or do you have any sense of what can happen here, that we can continue to have good journalism, investigative journalism that covers various beats and that provides us this really lifeblood for democracy on a regular basis, without necessarily there being the institution or the physical medium of the newspaper? I mean, are we moving in that direction?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's just the difficult shift to online. You know, I suspect in a decade, you know, most of the print products will be gone. You'll see the Wall Street Journal in print, yet you'll probably see the New York Times in print, but with a greatly reduced circulation. You know, but I think a lot of the smaller and mid-sized papers are going to abandon print or perhaps just have Sunday-only edition in Detroit. You know, they're only going to deliver 3 days a week very soon. So, yeah, it's going to be a shift, and it may be painful to online only. When I go to the Unicorn on Sherman in downtown Evanston, I see older people like me reading the print papers, and you see the students looking at their computer screens. You know, rarely, I don't often see a student reading a print newspaper. You know, I think that they've been brought up online and will continue to. And it's, you know, same with music and same with movies. The Blockbuster up the street from me on Dempster in Chicago is closing down. And when I saw that, I thought, well, finally, you know, because I'm downloading my movies from Apple TV or getting them from Netflix. You know, getting a movie from Blockbuster just seems so, you know, old-fashioned these days.
So you don't sound so pessimistic to me.
You know, I think that newspapers are going to continue to have to cut staff. But, you know, it's in part because of the recession. I mean, I don't want to give the impression that the newspapers are the only ones laying off people. Mm-hmm. You read the news, look at the TV news every night, and they're reporting, you know, banks and manufacturing, everybody's laying off people. But newspapers are hit by the double whammy, not only the economic downturn, but the difficult transition and the advertising revenue problems that they have because of the move to online. But, you know, maybe in 5 years it'll shake out. I mean, maybe they'll figure out a business model. And it's been interesting watching them debate what kind of model to adopt there. This week it's been a big discussion about micropayments. The Time magazine cover story is How to Save Your Newspaper, and Walter Isaacson proposes a micropayment system, and I just don't think that's going to work. You know, I don't think at this point you can tell people, oh, you want your news online, you're going to have to pay for it. That's not going to work. Another method is nonprofit news, have foundations own newspapers. That may not be the answer either. So there'll be a lot of debates and a lot of theories and a lot of things tried before they figure out what the working model is going to be. But, you know, from my perspective, it's interesting to watch it and report on it. Great.
Is it safe to say you think then the more the public knows about the sausage factory of journalism, and the more we take it into consideration, think about and discuss it, the better it is? The better it is for everyone?
Oh, yeah, I agree. I think so. And I think that the public needs to know what happens when you don't have reporters on the streets. I mean, reporters are watchdogs. I remember sitting in on Fire and Police Commission hearings and reporting those. And I suspect that those hearings are not being covered anymore. Somebody's got to be at these, you know, county council meetings and town hall meetings and so on and so forth. You know, we're the eyes and ears for the public. And even at these meetings, just to simply have a reporter there, I think influences the behavior of public officials. When they know there's a representative of the press, you know, who's really a representative of the public watching them, you know, I think that they're more likely to behave and to do the right thing, if you will. And I just read a tweet on Twitter today by a judge of a journalism contest, and he wrote that he was just wrapped up judging a lot of entries, and he said, after reading all these entries, he says, you realize how many crooked officials out there, because these journalists are doing a great job reporting on the corruption and the shady behavior. And, you know, he saw firsthand what happens when you do have reporters watching these officials. And we need more reporters on the streets.
Jim, thank you very much for joining me, and keep up the good work, please.
Great. Well, thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
Jim Romanesco, the man behind Romanesco's Media News. You can find that at pointer.org/Romanesco. And Pointer is pointer.org/Romanesco. Romanesco. And to get Jim's collection of more weird and strange news stories, check out obscurestore.typepad.com for the Obscure Store and Reading Room. So that does bring to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'll be back in one more week with more news and views on our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek online. It's at MediaGeek.net, which is home to the Media Geek blog. And the radio show is at Radio.MediaGeek.net. Subscribe to the podcast, download the program, or just listen on your browser. Whether you missed it on the radio, whether you want to catch it again, whether that's just the way you want to listen, radio.mediageek.net. If you have any comments about the program, please send them to me, paul@mediageek.net. And the Twitter feed, cannot forget the Twitter feed, twitter.com/mediageek. And Media Geek originates from the studios of WNUR-FM, 89.3 FM in beautiful Evanston, Illinois, serving Chicago and the northern suburbs. From the campus of Northwestern University, and Media Geek got its start at Community Radio 90.1 FM in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, the great WEFT, also heard online at weft.org. Thanks for tuning in.